This is A View from the Bridge, unofficial podcast of the Belfast Giants for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today is Thursday, the 7th of November, 2013, and my name is Patrick Smith. A little later than usual this week, folks. I've been on holiday, and we did try to do it earlier in the week, but I dropped the microphone into the hot tub. We've got a great show. There's plenty to talk about, considering it's nearly been 2 weeks since we've done the last podcast. There's been an awful lot to talk about, be it controversy, be it issues in Cardiff, games to talk about. But this week we've also got a fantastic interview with Shane Johnson. It's the next in our series that Neil the Coach Russell is doing with former Giants. He's got a brilliant interview with Shane, and you can catch that later on in the show. If you want to get in touch with us here on A View from the Bridge, you can give us an email to podcast@kingdomofthegiants.com, stepping over myself there, at AVFTB for Twitter, and www.kingdomofthegiants.com/podcast. Seems to be every week we're coming on here and there's plenty to talk about, and this week there's even more than plenty to talk about, but joining us to talk about it, as always, is Davey McGimsey. How are you doing, mate?
Hiya, Paddy.
How's the leg?
Not bad, mate. Getting better.
Trying to get an update every week to see how you're getting on, you know?
I'm still on long-term injured reserve, but I've, you know, hopeful for the playoffs.
and also joining us is a man who I think we have to now refer to him as Giants Live TV, UTV. Is there any other media outlet you're on, Neil the Coach Russell? Are we missing out on?
No, he's on the same, probably on the same outlet as Paul Wheeler, you know, his own.
You're all over the mainstream television. I think it's only a matter of time before you disappear and A View from the Bridge is left in its wake.
I was a bit surprised by that, to be honest with you, because whenever I clicked on that UTV link to actually to see the highlights, and I noticed the two full interviews with Brent Pope and with Adam Keefe on it. But yeah, I thought it was just doing it for Giants Live, but they ended up going to UTV as well.
See, national.
Yeah, I hope you've got your equity card sorted out, Coach. You know,
still no payment whatsoever. Absolute disgrace.
Unbelievable. I picked that up, everyone. Anyway, guys, there is absolutely loads to talk about, and a lot of it seems to revolve around the Cardiff Devils. But of course, we started this weekend with a doubleheader against the Devils. And the first game, Davey, a 2-1 loss on penalty shots. They were missing two players in Adams and in Phil Hill, obviously, now with the Sheffield Steelers. We were obviously missing Suez and Adam Keefe. Now, we spoke last week and we thought this game would be tight. But did you expect us to lose that match?
Didn't expect us to lose on Saturday night. I expected us to actually to have quite a comfortable weekend, just with the upset, I suppose, off the ice more than on the ice for Cardiff. But, you know, they came in and they played a very, very good road game, especially on Saturday night. You know, they were a wee bit looser on Sunday, but on Saturday night they were a tight unit and they made it very hard for us all over the ice, especially towards the start of the game. We just couldn't. LaCosta was immense at the weekend. You know, you're only as good as the shots that are put on you, but LaCosta stood tall for them on Saturday night, and, you know, it was really down to him that they got the win.
Mm. Coach, the Brent Pope's come in there as caretaker manager. We'll come to the whole issue with regards to that later on. But he's obviously reorganised them, and they were playing an absolutely brilliant road game. It was, as Davey says, very tight around LaCosta, and it was very difficult to get shots on.
Absolutely, and it was something that I really noticed on Saturday evening, especially, was, you know, the likes of Tyson Marsh was absolutely immense over both the games for the Cardiff Devils. You know, he's a big physical presence, but it wasn't just that. You know, the guy shut down passing lanes. He got in the way of pucks. You know, the Cardiff Devils gave 100% on every single shift. They were throwing their bodies in the line of the puck. And, you know, you could really see a concerted effort there, you know, kind of them all coming together as one on the back of, obviously, all the stuff that's happened off the ice there. And whether that's down to Brent Pope or whether that's just a collective player agreement to, you know, we need to pick this up. We're a far better team than a ninth place team. Who knows? You know, only those guys within the actual organisation will know that. But I was very impressed, and I said to Murph quite a few times on the commentary on Saturday night that, you know, they're not a ninth place team. They may well have been playing like it, but they're certainly, with the quality that they have, they're just not that ninth place team that they currently are.
It was a goal for Colin Shields, and then one for Dr. Piggott for the Cardiff Devils. And then it was Morissette with two really good penalty shots to give the Devils the win after overtime. I think the most natural thing to do now is to talk about the main incident of the game, and one is talked about right across the Elite League, and that was about 1:36 into the second period, a bit of a scuffle by the benches, and behind that play, Andrew Conboy seemed to pick up Jeff Mason, hand in his face, and was subsequently ejected for excessive roughness. Now, he's subsequently been given a 12-game suspension for attempted eye gouging, which is the same as Derek Campbell. Davey, your view of the situation. The video itself maybe wasn't as conclusive. The photograph was pretty damning, but it's obviously been the referee's report that's condemned Conboy to a 12-game suspension.
Yeah, I think good time to mention that, you know, we've talked about it before, probably last week's podcast, about the standard of referee in this league. And one night, Saturday night, was refereed fantastically by Tom Darnell. Sunday night wasn't fantastically refereed by Mike Hicks. This is probably came down to what Tom Darnell and his linesmen have seen, because, as you say, a picture only captures a moment in time. It's a very, very damning picture. Mason's obviously pretty cut up around his face and very annoyed, and the bench is very annoyed. We can only assume that there is an attempt at an eye gouge, and, you know, the league have been consistent, they've given 12 games, but for Conboy to do that, it is the height of stupidity, especially that guy is playing under a microscope at the minute. And his last ban, which laughably on the Inferno TV last night, you know, this, where he checks the linesman, they said they've accused the linesman of faking it, but the club made a statement after that saying, or it might have been before his previous ban, that Conboy has to be smarter. And that is the very opposite of what he did on Saturday night. He was completely stupid in what he did. First of all, he's gone and picked on the smallest guy on the ice. And, you know, what he's done, it's just ludicrous what he's done. He's got himself suspended for another 12 games in a 55-game season or whatever. You know, it's another quarter. He's going to have missed like 30% of the season sitting on his backside selling 50-50 tickets. It's not acceptable. I'm surprised the Cardiff Devils have stood by him. But, you know, he's their player, not ours. If he was our player, I think that the three of us would be frank enough to say that it was time when he was down the road.
Yeah, I think objectively speaking, when you look at it, I agree with you, Davey. The photograph, I know we all looked at the photograph, and Coach, you were very vocal on Twitter and the likes at the weekend with regards to the photograph being, you know, it's very damning, it is. But as you say, Davey, it only catches a moment in time. You can't convict based on the photograph. Now, also, you look at the video, as I said, the video's from quite a bit away. It looks like a bit of a face wash. But also, you've got a question, why is he out Jeff Mason? It's away from what's happening. He's picked up Jeff Mason, who, let's be fair, doesn't say booty or goose in the game, although he'll get on with his job as a defenceman. Why has he picked on him? Why is his face on there? Why is Mason reacting as he has? And then he's been ejected for excessive roughness, which has subsequently led to this ban. Coach, there can be very little argument here. I know that there's a lot of Cardiff Devils fans. We were saying, Dave, you mentioned the Inferno TV last night that seemed to be saying it's like he was brushing his hair away or was making some joke of the situation. I think there's very little argument can be made, especially when Coach, the referee has made a report as such.
Well, firstly, I don't think it's a joking matter in any manner, shape or form. Taking it back to when it happened, you know, again, Murph and I instantly said, why has he been thrown out? You know, geez, he must be getting thrown out based on his previous reputation. Like, he shouldn't be thrown out just for grabbing a hold of Jeff Mason, which is what we initially thought it was. You know, a bit of roughing and, you know, big 6'4" guy with a 5'10" guy and going to intimidate you, and then all of a sudden he's turfing the game. And all of a sudden, not 2-3 minutes later, we got a tweet through to us with a video off the actual link. And Murph and I sat there during the play, during the period, and we're looking at it, and all of a sudden you could see, I think it was Dustin White, Cotton, maybe Gareth Roberts, and another on the bench going absolutely ballistic, like pointing at Mason or pointing at Conboy and trying to get the referee's attention. And you could see instantly, Murph and I instantly called it and said, they're claiming eye gouging. They're claiming eye gouging. And then you could see Mason backing off and pointing straight to his eyes. And it became fairly clear from that point of view, or from that point on, that there was definitely either eye gouging or attempted eye gouging. And, you know, I think my protestations on Twitter later on that evening were probably based further on the from the chat that I had with Paul Leahy afterwards for the interview. And he was absolutely unequivocal that Jeff Mason had had visible marks on his eyes and down his face from the gouge. And, you know, whenever we got home later on that evening and saw the actual photographs, I think it was fair to, you're right, you know, it's a damning photograph, but you can't be convicted just on the photograph. But having seen Jeff Mason's eye and what Coach Eddie said, that, you know, it was fairly evident that, that this had occurred. And just a crazy situation. To echo what Davey said, you know, I am amazed that the Cardiff Devils have stood by him on this one because it's a headbutt, it's a hit on an official, and now an attempted eye gouge, you know, straight after that, you know, I mean, come on. I suppose the way maybe the Cardiff Devils are looking at it as well is, you know, if we sack this guy now, if we tell him bugger off, you know, they're still more than likely going to be an import down for at least those, you know, 10, 12 games that he's been suspended for. So is it better just to save on the cost of a flight or two flights, as it were, bringing another guy in and all that type of stuff, and just, you know, sitting tight with him and kind of rehabilitate him over the next couple of weeks?
It is a very interesting situation. One thing I will point out before we move on to Sunday's game is the consistency. I will point out, you say Adam Keefe, in his interview a couple of weeks ago, as I said, and with yourself, Coach, pointed out that Murray Hansen is trying to be consistent in what he's calling. He's given 12 games for attempted eye gouging, which is in line with the 12 games that was part of Derek Campbell's 5 million game suspension. And I think that is well worth pointing out. I will also point out that next week we've got a great interview with Tom Darnell that you did on Saturday before the game. And again, he talks about regards to refereeing and these bans being handed out. Gents, that moves us on to Sunday. I think the Giants had Suez and Keefe back in the lineup. Now, with the match suspension handed out to Andrew Conboy, the matchup between the two of those players didn't happen, obviously. It fell to Keefe and Plunder, but before that, it was a 2-1 regulation win for the Giants. And Davey, the Giants really had to respond after the night before.
Yeah, and they came back strong, and I suppose you see who got all our goals at the weekend, Suez and Shields, the guys that maybe came in for a bit of, you know, bit of a tap last week on the podcast about their performances. But I'm definitely someone in sport who believes, you know, if you're playing bad, you get to take the criticism, and if you're playing well, you take a pat on the back. And, you know, for Colin Shields, I thought Colin Shields went to the dirty areas really well on Saturday night, you know, or Saturday and Sunday. His goal on Saturday night, fantastically made by White Cotton, but Colin Shields bust his backside to get to the far stick, and, you know, he bust his balls from the blue line to get his stick down on that.
Yeah.
His goal on Sunday came, and he could have been standing in exactly the same spot as he scored from on Saturday night, and he's got the garbage goal right on the post. But for me, his no-look backhand pass to Suez on, it wasn't his most important point, because he got two goals, but his back no look backhand pass to set Suez up for his goal was for me a real beautiful point, and credit to Colin Shields on Saturday night and Sunday. Had a really good weekend, and he came up with the big points.
Absolutely. Coach, we did bring it. We gave him a bit of a ribbon last week in regards to whether he was out of games more than in, but he was involved in every single goal that the Belfast Giants scored this weekend.
I thought he was superb, and, you know, I kind of echo what Davey says. I, you know, I did have a moment of reflection, I have to say, after our last week's podcast, and I kind of thought to myself, you know, were we being a wee bit harsh with regard, you know, this guy is the all-time leading Giants point scorer, but, you know, I think he is just one of those types of players, and you could probably rhyme off plenty of really good players along the lines of Colin Shields who certainly it appears to the fan in the stand that a bit of a drifter at times. And I think maybe part of that from our perspective is, you know, he's not a big forechecker. So he's not someone that, you know, he's not a Daryl Lloyd. So if Daryl Lloyd's not coming up with goals, he's a very visible presence to the fan in the stand as to his work rate and what have you. Colin Shields isn't that physical presence. But then you could flip that on its head and say, neither is Jeff Mason in defence or Robbie Sandrock in defence. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword in a lot of ways, but Colin Shields is a proven point scorer, and, you know, at the end of the day, he wasn't three goals up until last weekend. He had three goals, of which all three were scored in one game versus Brayhead. So there were another 13 games where there were no goals, albeit there were some assists, both first assists and secondary assists in there, which of course plays a massive part in scoring a goal. That goes without saying. But you know, Colin Shields is a good player, and there's no question about that. And I was delighted to see him coming up with two really important goals last weekend. And I really hope that that's a catalyst for him to move forward into the rest of the season with a lot more goals.
Just to add there, Paddy, you know, his two goals and his assists all came from being netminder side of the last D man. He was getting in behind him. He was getting to the goal, you know. And when you're in that position, you can't be tackled. So, you know, he made the effort. He put the big shifts in on Saturday night, and full credit to him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think considering the way we laid into him last week, and I think, you know, at that point, I think we were justified in laying into what was at that point I didn't think he was producing, as we know Colin Shields could. And then this weekend he did show us exactly what Colin Shields can do, and with that two plus one, you know, it's exactly what the Giants needed, and it was the top line scoring and not so much the second line. Pretty anonymous this weekend, Davey.
I think, just in as you said previously there, a very, very tight game.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know that they were that anonymous. As you know, someone's asked a question, and we'll get on to it later, a question about Evan Chevrolet. You know, we talked about Suez and Shields last week. Mm-hmm. They want to talk about Evan Chevrolet this week. We'll come to that later in the show. I didn't think they were anonymous as much as they were. They played a much tighter shutdown game this week than a massive game going forward. We put a lot of shots on Lacoste. I don't have the stats in front of me, but I'm sure over the two games, we had the guts of 70 to 80 shots on Lacoste, maybe more. I don't know. I'll look it up whenever a coach is talking here. But, you know, we...
I think we had the guts of 50 on Saturday night. I remember Coach Ailey saying that.
You know, I think that we played a more shutdown defensive forward style game on Saturday night and Sunday. So, you know, I'm not too concerned about it. I think that line's still high quality.
And Coach, you've been calling for it for weeks and weeks and weeks, and on Sunday night you finally got a 2-2. If it was a bit one-sided between Keith and Plumpton.
Yeah, I think everyone I kind of picked up the vibe from Saturday night and up in the commentary box and the whole Plumpton thing, or sorry, the whole convoy thing happened, and Keith and Suez were both up in the box beside us, and both very, let's just say, I had the tiger down towards the ice, as if to say, this ain't going to be happening tomorrow night. And, you know, both guys were very keen to see the replays, and both guys were quite audible in their protestations towards what was happening on the ice. And, you know, Keith is that type of player. He won't have anyone pushing around his team. And, you know,
heartbeat of the squad.
He is. Tell me if I'm wrong. He is. I know I'll repeat it, but he is a heartbeat of our organisation. And, you know, things like that there, you know, he wanted to, as he said after the game, he wanted to lay a marker down that this team ain't going to be pushed around. And I think he's right as well. I think what Cardiff tried to do maybe on Saturday night with, you know, the convoy situation and some of the other push and shoving that went on, I think, with Plumpton and Surrett as well. You know, this is a Giants team. This is a team tough team. And whilst they're not all going to be dropping the gloves and fighting every night or anything like it, you know, the guys aren't afraid to kind of step up or you know, stand eyeball to eyeball with the opposition. And, you know, Keith just epitomises that, as does Suez. Like, Suez was very active on the physical front on Sunday night, probably a wee bit too much at times, gave away a couple of very silly minor penalties. But, you know, I like to see Jeff Suez playing on the edge for us, sort of. And it was a one-sided fight. It wasn't much of a fight. There was a couple of punches thrown on both sides, and Kiefer definitely got the better of him. But we're still yet to see what I would call a classic, you know, toe-to-toe stand-up fight, like we maybe saw with Keith and Jernick last season. Mm-hmm. You know,
I think just to close out these games, guys. I say split points. Max Berbrer scored the one goal for the Cardiff Devils, and it ended up the weekend ended with 2 points for the Cardiff Devils and 3 points for the Belfast Giants. But we're going to stick with Cardiff, guys, and the saga turned farce that seems to be taking place in South Wales. It took another bit of a turn. Now, we haven't spoken on the podcast since last Monday. It's now Thursday, and in that time, quite a bit has happened. when we spoke last, Adams had returned to the ice, and that was a bit of a confusion. And it was initially spoken through his agent that he was going to be fulfilling his contract. After the podcast, the Devils announced that he was to be made Director of Player Development, which everybody seems to believe effectively puts him on gardening leave. He's out of the side. Brent Pope has been installed as the caretaker coach. There was a backlash from some former players. You know, they. But from that, when with Pope as caretaker coach, in quotation marks, they've got 4 points out of six. Now, the other night, Twitter was littered with a series of facts, Rafa Benitez style, with regards to the clarity on their recruitment. And then, following that, a very ill-advised tweet from Paul Regan referring to the Devils militia and the true fans, which seemed to widen the gap between an already divided fan base. Today, we have a new social media policy for the Cardiff Devils where they said they'll not be interacting with fans on Twitter or Facebook any longer. And if you want to discuss things, you have to contact the club by email. And we also have heard that they've actually signed another player, which will be playing, say, See You Sunday. Coach, where do you start?
It's I've always been a huge Cardiff Devils fan. I have loved whenever they've rolled into Belfast because, especially in Gerard Adams' time, they've always had a really big physical team. But they've always had quality players in there as well. The likes of John Pelle, Chris Blight, Mac Faulkner. These guys, I used to love Sacratini playing for Cardiff. He was a wee rink ratty, but he was a skillful player. Brad Voth, all these guys, they just had a presence about them, and I have always loved Belfast Giants versus Cardiff Devils games. One of my most enjoyable away games was spent over in the old Cardiff Bay Arena, you know, the old Cardiff Arena, and what an atmosphere and all the rest. I have loved that organisation and love what they bring to the table for the Elite League, but what has gone on the last month has just been... It's just been ridiculous, Paddy. It really has. It has to have been incredibly embarrassing for a lot of Cardiff Devils fans. You know, I know if that was going on in my club, and we had our embarrassing situation last year. So we did, which was unfortunately played out in the mainstream media and what have you. Not through us doing it, or the Belfast Giants doing it, but through other reasons. But the Cardiff Devils have made a real joke out of this in a lot of ways. And, you know, I feel so sorry for Gerard Adams. Yeah, he's just been... That guy has taken them to playoffs for the last 8 years, Paddy, 8 years consecutively. And the way he has been treated, in my opinion, has been absolutely scandalous.
Davey, it's been a situation there where the fans are divided. Now, a coach brought up, we've had our own public spat, but in that situation, I think the Belfast Giants were very reserved and quiet and dignified and in not being brought into what was basically a firefight. The Cardiff Devils, and through social media, seem to have waded in feet first, and it's just muddied the waters, hasn't it?
Absolutely. It's sometimes wise to, you know, keep your counsel and just... say nothing, you know, this time they've came out. There's been a lot of, you know, I'm not talking about Brent Pope, I'm talking about what's already out in the public domain. You know, there's been a lot of chat that Brent Pope, you know, wanted the coach's job and kind of, you know, half forced Gerard Adams' hand. But, you know, for want of a better, Adams has been sacked on full pay until the end of the season. You know, he's director of player development, he's not going to be back next season. Hopefully, you know, for Jared's sake, he can go out and get himself a job and stay in hockey and hopefully stay in the UK. He's been a real good, you know, servant to UK hockey, as Coach says, playing and taking the Devils to the playoffs the last load of seasons. And, you know, only for a bounce here or there would have had more banners hanging from the rafters. But, you know, the games that Pope has been in charge of alongside Adams on the bench when Adams was off the ice for a few weeks, and the games that he's taken over from, one of coach's favorite terms, you know, stats don't lie, they've taken points and they've tightened down as a unit, and they're going to be a hard team to beat. So, you know, I've seen a lot of Cardiff fans saying, you know, we support the club, we don't support the manager, and a bit like a football team, you know, much as I loved Alex Ferguson, you know, whether he's doing well or not, you have to get behind Moyes at United and Benitez and all the pantomime that goes on year at Liverpool. You know, you have to just get behind whoever the manager is at the time and you support the club. So I would be saying the Cardiff Devils fans, you know, you've got Pope now. That's not going to change for a while. Reagan, Pope's Reagan's man. So, you know, get in, get support in your team and try and get them up the standings. And hopefully then you'll be in you're through the next round of the Challenge Cup. Hopefully you'll be at the playoffs. And, you know, the season's far from over for you.
And that Anfield pantomime seems to be going very well this season. Brent Pope, coach, like I say, he's in. You spoke to him. You spoke to him at the weekend. He's in. Has been referred to as caretaker coach. Now that seems to suggest that the Cardiff Devils are looking for a man to take places in a more permanent deal. And I will throw in the fact that Brent Pope will probably miss about 7-8 games because he's confirmed as being the BBC's co-commentator for Olympic hockey in Sochi. So that's going to take him away to Russia for a couple of weeks. So it just throws more confusion into what exactly is going on in the managerial role.
It's very strange, I have to say. I did three interviews with him over the course of the weekend, pre-game, post-game with him on both Saturday and Sunday, and found him on each of the occasions to be very hospitable and very very willing to have a word. And I felt very kind of frank about things and was honest enough to say that things have been very difficult. I have to say, I didn't know how to refer to him at first. I wasn't sure whether to call him the coach, the assistant coach, the caretaker coach, the stand-in coach or whatever. But, you know, he's in there now as acting coach. And he's a great start, hasn't he? You know, 4 points from six available. And That Sochi thing is a strange one. You know, what are the dates for that, Paddy? When are they?
It's late February, isn't it? They've got a couple of while the Olympics are on. They've got a couple of games against Hull, a couple of games against Sheffield. I think a game against Fife and Brayhead. So those will certainly be dealt with. And
I know, but like how amateurish, or to quote my famous hashtag, how village is that of a club? You know, imagine Paulie disappearing off for missing six or seven games to go and do commentary. You know, we'd be absolutely up in arms. And, you know, Brent Pope actually is someone who I think is very good on commentary, and I always have enjoyed listening to him anytime he did it in Sky. But, you know, that's supposed to be your coach. And if that's true that he's confirmed to head off, I would not be a happy guy as a Cardiff Devils fan, I have to say. Unless I get somebody in by then to replace Brent Pope or to replace Jared Adams, as it were.
Well, I believe the soap opera will continue. They seem to be wanting to keep their own counsel now, as Davey put it, with regards to the social media having had a bit of an uproar this week. But sorry, go on.
I strongly disagree with that, because to me, social media, if utilised in a professional manner by a person, by a club, by any form of an organisation, whether that be the sporting organisation or whether it be a business organisation, can be utilised to its full potential and utilised very, very well. And in my opinion, you just wouldn't see the likes of the Nottingham Panthers, the Belfast Giants engaging in some of the stuff that maybe has been engaged upon by the Devils on.
It was very strange. The whole facts as they came out, it seemed to be that they were trying to deal with some forum-based speculation, because it seemed to come out of nowhere. There seemed to be chat going on, whether it was based on chat that was going on the Inferno or chat that was going on Twitter. Somebody within the Devils organisation, be it Reagan, be it Pope, be it somebody else, felt it necessary to come out and start to air their dirty linen in public with regards to what the recruitment was going to be. We're looking at this guy, but they turned us down. We're looking at this guy. We're looking at Messias at Brayhead, you know, after he left there, but he's turned us down. And it's not the way that this sort of situation should be done. It should be done behind closed doors for the club. And if those fans want to speculate, you let them speculate, because you do your job and you bring a player out and you put the player on the ice and show them through your recruitment, through what you're doing behind closed doors, that you're doing your job properly. You don't go out and start shouting about exactly what you're doing behind those closed doors, because, as we'll coin a new ding term, it is village.
Paddy, just to jump in, the hockey world is now so small. You know, you have access. If you want to tweet Pavel Datsyuk now, you can go and tweet him. All these hockey players that have a potential to play in the UK next year, that have played in the UK, are seeing these tweets.
Yeah.
We talked about it for the last 18 months with Ryan Finnerty in Sheffield and Tony Smith calling him out, and not specifically on Twitter, but in the local paper or whatever. You know, you have organisations like Belfast and Nottingham, and players know that if they come and sign for this team, no matter what goes on, off the ice, behind closed doors, whatever, it's not going to hit the media. Whereas players are looking at that and going, "What's that's a circus." And yeah, Cardiff have to look at the bigger picture, which is a 10-year plan or a 5-year plan, whatever Reagan's plan is, you know, to get into this new rink. Whenever he hopefully gets that club in the new rink, he's going to have to put players on the ice. And there's going to be players that are going to look at that and just go, as coach would say, that's village. I'm staying well clear of that club. So that there definitely need, I agree that they need to bring some sort of social media policy in, that whoever had their hands on the Cardiff Devils iPhone the other night made a dick of himself. But, you know, it's got to be, they've got to put a policy in place. But I think it is a real retrograde, backward step to say, we're no longer using Twitter, and email us if you want, and we'll come back to you within 48 hours or whatever. Bad step.
But it's got to be, it has to be used. Twitter and Facebook have to be used as forums to integrate, that's the wrong word, to work alongside or to involve the fans, to make the fans feel needed and make the fans feel wanted. You know, it's an absolute necessity for clubs to do that now. For the Cardiff Devils just to kind of shut up the doors and shut up shop, it's a very strange move. And I'm really surprised from a, like, Reagan is obviously a very successful businessman, and I'm just surprised that there's not a bit more cop on there with regards to, you know, if Reagan's selling stuff to customers, he's got to make sure that the customer's happy. Well, his customers on this occasion are the Cardiff Devil fans, and there are a large proportion of those fans at present who are incredibly unhappy with what they're seeing and what they're hearing. And, you know, that tweet the other night was very, very ill-advised, in my humble opinion.
Incredibly ill-advised, especially considering it basically, he was highlighting a split in the fan base in regards to what he referred to as the Devil's Militia, and then the other ones that he referred to as true fans. And the other bit I found weird on it was the fact that he said that they may as well have been, quote, Sheffield fans. I don't know why he brought that into it, because Paul Regan himself was happy enough to celebrate a Sheffield Steelers championship as the owner when he was owner there, so Is that a derogatory term to a club that he used to be an owner? You know, very, very strange, and I don't know what his approach was there. But I think that this whole saga, it has to play out somehow. It's obviously going to play out with the departure of Jared Adams at some point. But how the Devils go forward, who this new player is, and I don't think they're not into the league. The Challenge Cup will be a struggle. If they're going to build for a playoffs, we'll just have to see.
We spoke about it just last week, Paddy, where, you know, the Cardiff Devils already have a tenuous enough attendance every week. You know, it's 1,200, 1,300, 1,400, 1,500 people. Paul Regan cannot afford to have that crowd split in half. You're never going to lose half your crowd. But, you know, you've got the young guy that does the bit for the Cat's Whiskers on the TV the other day, crying almost into his pillow in his bedroom. You know, it's just, you know, they're losing fans hand over fist, and they have to be very careful. We said it last week, be careful what you wish for, guys, because when your sugar daddy walks away, who's going to pick up the pieces for you? So I think it's time to get, you mightn't like it, but it's time to get behind your team. Just my opinion.
Well, moving on from the Cardiff Devils, we're actually going to have a bit now with a guy who once actually played for the Cardiff Devils. Coach, moving on, your Where Are They Now section reaches its second point, and you had a chance to speak with Shane Johnson, number 4, legendary player for the Belfast Giants and the man who ended the London Knights. And you spoke to him a couple of weeks ago. Here's a fantastic interview.
Okay, delighted to say we've got our second installment of the A View from the Bridge podcast and the Where Are They Now section. And I'm delighted to say we've got a Belfast Giants legend, number 4, Shane Johnson, a man who has played 454 games, amassing 188 points. Shane, you're very welcome on the podcast.
Good to be with you, Neil.
let's just take it back then, Shane. Let's take it back to 1998-99 and your first trip over to the UK and the London Knights. You know, similar question to the one that I asked Corey. What enticed you over to the UK?
Well, at the time, I just finished playing with the Canadian national team and got a lot of exposure to playing over in Europe and what that meant. And the decision to go to London came by way of my assistant coach when I was playing youth hockey when I was about 15, 16 years old. He was now coaching the London Knights, Jim Fiarczyk, and I happened to run into him at a hockey camp that was going on in my hometown, and he asked what I was doing. And I said I was just waiting to see what contracts are out there. And he said, well, I've got an extra spot for a D-man. Do you want to join me in London? So I thought about it. He told me a little bit more about the team and where it was going, and that's what brought me over to London.
And you obviously then, you played that season with London, then went to Bracknell with Wes, and then obviously the big year, 2000-2001, and you made the big move to Belfast. And again, a similar question to the one that I asked Corey. You know, obviously, you would imagine anyway, we'd imagine that Wes played a part in influencing you to come over to Belfast. So I suppose, one, is that fact? And two, was there any pensiveness there from your side of things about coming to a new franchise and moving over to Belfast?
Yeah, I mean, I think after that year in Bracknell, we won the league that year. We had a great year, but I knew there were some changes coming. And at that point, I was starting to think about, well, what's the next challenge for me? Where was I going to be? So I was starting to look in places like Germany and that for a team to play on. When Wes gave me a call in the summer, and he said, there's a new franchise starting up in Belfast. I'm the new coach. I've been there. It's going to be a great setup, and I think you should join me. And the fact that he had called and had the same conversation with, you know, seven or eight different guys in the same team, and I knew they would be there. We had so much success in Bracknell. I just thought it would be a great situation to go into.
Obviously, that first season was a strange one in some ways, because we kicked off the first 3 months and, you know, all the games were away from home, and that must have been tough in itself. But I suppose I'll go directly to that opening night in December 2000. You know, give us a feel for what it was like as a player, that anticipation and that build-up to that opening game. I remember it vividly, the atmosphere in the building. As someone who had never watched a game of hockey before, it was a fantastic atmosphere, and I'm sure you guys felt it as well in the dressing room.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, we've been playing on the road for quite some time, and you know, obviously we were familiar with the opponents we were playing against, but we weren't really familiar with what was going to happen in Belfast that first game. And I remember it was a pretty electric atmosphere. It was a sold out game. There was a delay in a face off, just getting everybody into the building. And being new to the sport, it was fun for the players, because the fans, in a lot of ways, didn't really know the appropriate times to cheer or know any of the rules, so they were going crazy at moments in the game where we didn't think anything was going on, and any time there was any kind of bumping with other players, they would go crazy. So, you know, when fans are screaming and yelling when they anticipating a little bit of physical play, then, you know, that kind of leads to more physical play. So, yeah, it was a great atmosphere.
And whenever you look back on that team, like that opening season team, you had the likes of Ferroni, Bosey, Packer. You know, that was we had genuine heavies in that team. But those guys could all play the game as well. And I suppose that's a part of the game which is kind of filtered away in the current elite league, because, you know, the money's just not there, the resource, the import levels, etc. So I'm sure you've noticed big changes from the Super League days to the Elite League days.
Yeah, I mean, there's been all sorts of changes. I mean, at that time, you know, every team in the league had tough guys that could play. You know, it wasn't just Belfast. I mean, that was the league. It was a very professional, very skilled league, and also known for its toughness. you know, the changes have come, you know, from salary caps changing, from structures of imports changing, to even the game itself. I mean, you know, you look at the North American game and they're really cracking down on fighting. They're cracking down on dirty hockey, things like that. They've cut down on what we call a clutch and grab. It would slow the pace of the game down. I mean, when we were playing, you know, you could do a lot of holding, you could do a lot of clutch and grab and that kind of stuff. So it made room for the bigger, more physical players. Whereas nowadays, you know, some of those bigger players would have a real tough time playing in the league just because of that factor. You can't hold on to players like you used to be able to.
Yeah, well, you talk about the physical side of the game, and again, this is something that I raised with Corey, and he remembered it reasonably well. You know, that famous night, the 26th of October 2002, I think you may well have been on the ice at the time, you might be able to correct me, but the Barry Nicar, Paxton Schulte, ensuing brawl, I'm sure you have plenty of memories of that game.
Yeah, well, I think everybody was on the ice because that was the end of the game that all happened.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so I mean, I think I might have even started that somehow. But yeah, that was crazy. I think, you know, at that point, you know, we had a few injuries to some of our bigger guys like Paul Cruz, and didn't have him in the lineup, which would have helped. But it was a wild night.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose then moving it forward then into the next season, the 2002-2003 season, it was, you know, we just missed out in the league, I believe. I think it was the Sheffield, and then went on to win the playoffs. And, you know, that season was full of highs and lows, I suppose, a low being losing out to Sheffield, but winning the playoffs. And then also that trip to Lugano. What were your memories of the Lugano trip?
I mean, it was great. I mean, I had it reminded me of my time playing with Team Canada, where we traveled throughout Europe and got a lot of exposure to playing European hockey. So, you know, it had been for me a couple of years since I'd been playing in the mainland Europe, and you know, I was really excited to get back to playing that style of play. And then, of course, for the guys, just being on the road, you know, it's just a different atmosphere when guys travel on the road together. You know, they get to know each other a bit better. You know, you get that more of a camaraderie going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it was certainly taking it back to the playoffs that year. I can remember being in the NIC and the final against the London Knights. And I think you gave me one of my most euphoric moments as a Giants fan with that slapshot goal in the final. Do you remember it? I'm sure you do.
I do, yeah. It's a funny thing. I had just switched sticks a week before the finals weekend, so it was my first time using this particular type of stick, and you know, I noticed it was really zipping off my blade when I was shooting. So I was really keen to shoot every time I got the puck, and I was just lucky enough to get in two in that game.
Yeah, well, you know, moving forward, I suppose, from kind of the 2003 season onwards, it went from the Super League into the Elite League. Did you have any hesitation? Or again, it was something that I mentioned with Corey, and he kind of said, you know, listen, I didn't want to drop down in standard. You know, I'd still an opportunity to progress in the AHL, which he did do. He went back and played a couple of years. Did you have any aspirations to kind of maybe head back North America way, or were you happy enough, you know, moving from the Super League into the Elite League era?
Well, I mean, at that time, you know, obviously there was, you know, a few good Jeff Hoad, Roddy Stevens, you know, guys like that. They left and went on to Germany to play at that point, or Russia, or wherever else they went to play.
Yeah.
And I certainly had, you know, thoughts about going over there. But at that time, I had met my soon-to-be wife, and it just really wasn't something I wanted to do when I was starting to think about getting married and things like that.
Yeah, of course. And then kind of around that 2005 period, Ed Courtney took over at the Belfast Giants, and that was a period whenever you were kind of in and out with Belfast. And I think, you know, most of the fans would speculate that your relationship with Ed Courtney might not have been the strongest. Would that be a fair assessment or not, so to speak?
Well, I mean, you know, you'd have to ask Ed, you know, his thoughts on me. It's not really fair for me to say what he thought about me. But for me, that was tough. His first year there, you know, I started the very first game and I tore my knee out. And I was suffering for about 6 weeks or so trying to come back from that injury, which originally was diagnosed as just a minor sprain. But, you know, 6 weeks down the road, it still wasn't getting better. And you know, we had to get it looked at again, and where we found out there was a more serious cartilage injury that needed to get fixed up. So I went in for an operation. Coming back from that operation, we thought it was a minor operation. It turns out it was kind of a medium to more significant injury. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to play, trying to fight my way back into the lineup with an injury that really I should have been out of the lineup for a lot longer. But, you know, just being a hockey player, you want to get back in the lineup as quick as possible, and you want to help the team and secure your place in the team. So I think from Ed's perspective, he probably didn't see the best of me, or his impression of me was probably not the best. You know, I mean, I was mm-hmm. limping around the ice for half the time. So, you know, I suppose if that's his impression that he got from me, then he's got to make decisions based on that. Certainly, you know, as a hockey player, you know, all the guys do it. They struggle through injuries and do their best to help the team, with the hope that those sacrifices that you make to help the team are considered when new contracts are being negotiated. You know, you want to think that you're being appreciated for going in the trenches for the team. And so, from my perspective, it didn't work out. And obviously very disappointed about that originally, but was lucky enough to get back in Belfast when Ed was still here. And we managed to pull what could have been a very disappointing season into a respectable season.
Absolutely. And, you know, keeping it in the round that era, in the 2005 era, obviously Theo Fleury arrived in Belfast. Something jogging my memory that you had a part with in actually bringing him over, or it was a chance meeting with Jim Jaworski on a plane whenever you're heading home to North America. Is that right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I just happened to meet Jim on a plane, and he got to talking, and he's quite the talker, and he said he'd be interested in buying a hockey team, which, you know, at that point, I think, you know, the owners of Giants, Jim Gillespie, was interested in listening to potential buyers, and I introduced the two to each other, and they took it from there. I mean, Jim Jaworski had mentioned that Theo was an acquaintance of his through various connections, that he could get him over to Belfast, and of course, I didn't believe him at first. But sure enough, he showed up here, and you know, the rest is history.
And that must have been a pretty awesome experience for a guy, a North American guy, to all of a sudden be sharing the same dressing room, sharing the same coach, hotel rooms, and all the rest with a hockey legend, and you know, what you would imagine will hopefully be at some stage a future hockey Hall of Famer.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could see Theo. I mean, it was. He's like a natural, you know. He just had that superstar kind of quality to him. I mean, he was getting a bit older, obviously, and, you know, physically he wasn't what he was in his best days. But you could see when he got on the ice, there was flashes of kind of brilliance, is what you'd say. He could just do things that other guys, you know, couldn't do. He'd just make that pass that nobody else would try, and, you know, things like that. And it was really neat to see how he looked at the game and how he found space on the ice.
Yeah, well, again, moving it forward, I put a few things out on Twitter, on our podcast account, and a few questions kind of came through from various different fans to ask. And I suppose one of them was to do with your time there in around the 2006 period, where you started off the season, I think it was with the Slough Jets. You were with them for 8 games and then moved on to Sheffield, where you ended up having like 22 points in 42 games. That must have, what influenced you to go to Slough initially, and then what kind of took you to Sheffield? And you obviously ended up doing very well with Sheffield. Was that an enjoyable couple of seasons with them?
I had a great time there, actually. You know, I mean, starting going to Slough in the first place was more a consideration of being able to get back to Belfast to see my wife, Emma. More than anything, it was just a convenience. I know that they play their games just on weekends, and there's a little bit more free time during the week. And, you know, that was the biggest consideration for me rather than, you know, the level of play. As far as going to Sheffield, Dave Matsos gave me a call, you know, a couple weeks into his season. They had picked up a couple injuries on D, and he just gave me a call on the off chance that I might be interested in going up. And, of course, when he called, you know, I had a good relationship with David and a lot of respect for him and Sheffield. And I jumped the chance to go. First game was in Nottingham, which was a huge rivalry. So that was my first taste of that rivalry that Sheffield has with Nottingham. And it was a really great experience. So for me that year, you know, I'd played so long in Belfast, and you know, when you play in the same environment, the same city for a long period of time, there's certain things you take for granted, and there's certain things that maybe people take for granted from me, and that was really nice. I mean, I felt really appreciated in Sheffield. I really felt like I had influence on the team. I felt like I was respected there and wanted, and obviously, you know, not getting re-signed in Belfast, at that point, I didn't feel very wanted within the organization. And to go to an organization that, you know, not only wanted me, but was willing to express it and show it was really nice feeling.
Absolutely. And of course, that was during the Ed Courtney era. But that 2007 and 2008 season, you started off three games with the Steelers, and then you had three games with the Devils, and then you were back to the Giants. How did that all come about, and what was the situation there?
Well, I mean, again, it was a lifestyle thing for me. I was married to Emma over here, and I didn't really want to spend my married life, playing in a different country while, you know, my wife is here. It just didn't seem like long term much of an option for me. So after the Sheffield, you know, they had asked me to re-sign for a second year. They offered me a 2-year deal to stay on for two more years in Sheffield. And, you know, obviously I was thinking, well, that's a great offer, but, you know, it would mean I would be living in a different city, and I had to take that into consideration. So I had essentially retired. I thought, okay, well, I'm going to retire from hockey and just figure out what's next. And so that's what happened. But as usual happens in the league, Sheffield picked up injuries. And Maddie called me right away, asked me if I could fill in for a couple weeks. So I did, played five games with them. While I was over there, G called me in Cardiff and said, can you fill in for me? I got injuries too. Can you do a couple of weeks? So I was over to Cardiff for a couple of weeks. And while I was there, I was called by Hull to fill in for a couple of weeks. I was called for Coventry to call for fill in for a couple of weeks. Cardiff offered to extend me for the year. Todd called from Belfast. So, I mean, that was a really nice feeling to have everybody, you know, wanting your services.
That must have been a great thing. You know, as you say, it's every sportsman, every person likes to feel wanted. And, you know, to get that call again from Todd, and, you know, you had such a fantastic career with the Giants. You starting out in 2000, and you know your last season with the Giants was 2005-2006, and then you come back again in that 2008-2009 season. You know, it must have been nice just to come back onto home ice, and as you say, your wife and family were here in Belfast.
Yeah, I mean I've been in Belfast for a long time, but you know I experienced a pretty good roller coaster over those few years, and it was really nice to get back to Belfast and really feel like I was contributing to the team, and you know, it was kind of back on home turf, as it were.
Yeah, and then obviously you were given the greatest honour that any hockey player can be given, and getting your jersey retired. And you know, I can remember your testimonial evening as well on the 26th of January in 2011. That must have been a fantastic night for you and Emma, and I think you're just a one kid at that stage, but you know, it must have been a really proud evening for you. I know as a fan, and it was a fantastic evening and great to see so many of the legends come back, and I think that's probably a reflective of how popular you were within the dressing room and your own teammates, that so many of these guys came back to play in your testimonial.
Yeah, no, I mean, all those guys that came back, you know, those are guys that feel really fondly about, you know, Belfast as a city and the Giants as a team, and they have lots of friends here as well. So, you know, for them to come back, you know, they really jumped a chance, you know, to come back and see the city again and you know, visit the Odyssey. So that was great for them. I mean, for myself, it was, you know, it's kind of one of those, it was a tremendous honor. And you know, if you'd asked me 3 years prior to that if it was going to happen, you know, obviously I didn't think that was ever going to happen. So it was a great honor. The night itself, it's kind of like a wedding night. You know, you're running around and you only have these, you know, 3-minute conversations with all your friends and fans that you've known over the years. So it's it's hard to take it all in one go. But it was a great, great experience.
And it must be proud, because I know you still go and watch some of the games and what have you in the Odyssey. Must be a proud thing for you to walk in and see your name and number hanging from the rafters.
It is. I mean, I think more so now that you know, I have some kids and you know, they get to know. I mean, they wouldn't have seen me play, but they get to, you know, years from now they'll be able to say, well, that's my dad's number and he did play, and you know, he is part of the history of the Giants, and that's a really, really nice feeling.
Absolutely. And again, going back to some of the questions that came through on Twitter, one of the questions came through, what was your favorite Giants team that you played on? You know, I can remember some absolutely fantastic ones. My own personal favorite was the 2002-2003 team. But you know, you're the man that's answering the question. So what was your favorite Giants team?
Yeah, I'd have to say that team as well. It was an easy year. You know, it was easy because, you know, you had tons of talent on the team. You had a good bunch of guys that everybody got along. It was fun to come to the rink, you know.
And then some of the other questions that came through. Who was your best friend during your hockey days? I know you and Killer were quite pally, but who was your best friend during your hockey days? And you know, whether it be right from the start of your career or right through to the end.
It's really hard to say. I don't think I have a best friend. I kind of. You know, the way the team goes, I mean, those guys that were there for the first 3 years, you know, then they're gone. You know, there's only a few guys that stuck around. And then you've got, you know, you kind of have guys around for 2 to 3 years and then they disappear. I mean, the guys that have been there for the longest, that I played the longest with, I guess you could say, you know, better friendships with, you know, guys like Graham Walton and Mark Morrison, Rob Stewart, Todd Kelman, the guys that Jason Bowen, he's still around here. You know, guys like that that have been around the longest. You know, we consider better friends.
And you know, as you intimated there, you played in some fantastic Giant teams, and we've been very blessed with some incredible talent that's come through and played for the Belfast Giants. Who was the best player that you ever played with?
Jason Ruff. Happy Jason Ruff. He had just a mix that, you know, was tough to play against. You know, I always thought I was, you know, I had quick feet and could stay up with the faster players, you know, but he had the mix. He had the speed. He had, you know, the size and grit. He had, you know, a big shot. He could, you know, he could beat you a lot of ways. You know, he could shoot from outside and beat you. He could muscle it to the net. He could finesse it and make a real nice pass, you know, and he had that ability to show up in the biggest games and get you a goal when you need it, or, you know, make the big play to get the team going, and you know, those kind of things are hard to come by.
He was, you know, certainly I always remember he was a go-to guy, as you quite rightly say, and he was also tough as nails. He wasn't afraid to drop the gloves on many occasions as well, and he was in some ways maybe not feared, but he certainly could stand up for himself and wasn't afraid to go toe-to-toe with guys.
Yeah, no, he's just very well respected around the league and on the team. You know, word gets around pretty quick. You know, if you do one or two fights and, you know, you surprise people. And that's what he did. You know, every time he fought, you know, word, and he did well, word gets around that, oh, he's actually pretty tough. Don't mess with him.
Yeah. And listen, just finally, I suppose, just, you know, what's life been like since hockey? Where has life taken Shane Johnson since your skates were hung up?
Again, another bit of a roller coaster, really. I started off working at Citigroup in investment banking, got into some recruitment for a while, but now I've just very recently decided to make a change on things, and I'm helping out as a classroom assistant with the hope of becoming a teacher at some point.
Very good. Very good. And are you going to go off to university and maybe do some stuff there as well then? Is that a requirement for that?
Yeah, that's the plan. I mean, I kind of reevaluated things and kind of figured out what I want to be doing long term. And I think for me anyways, teaching allows me to you know, get that interaction that I like, stay involved in some way in sports, and that's really what I think will make me happiest long term.
Well, Shane, listen, just want to take the opportunity just to say a massive thank you for taking the time out just to speak to us. You were a fantastic player for the Belfast Giants. You know, you won two Super League championships in your career. You've won a Super League playoff championship, Challenge Cups, playoffs. You were the most goals by a defenseman in the Elite League, most points by a defenseman. Your record is second to none. And I know that the Belfast Giants fans absolutely adored watching you play and the commitment that you showed every time that you went onto the ice. And just on behalf of the Giants fans, a massive, massive thank you. And if there's anything you want to say to the Giants fans, we can pass it on this podcast.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on here, Neil. It's been a pleasure, and I can say it's been a pleasure being a part of the Giants and its history. Again, yeah, thanks to all the fans over the years that are now my friends.
Coach, you know, these always seem to be just basically you having a discussion with one of your mates.
I was very lucky in the early years to I worked at the time up at David Lloyd as a sales manager up there, and the first people through the door were Todd Kelman, Colin Ward, and Paxton Schulte, and they were both coming into the gym, and I had absolutely no idea. It was August 2000. I had no idea whatsoever what these Canadian guys were over for. I had no idea about ice hockey, not a thing. And I got to know the guys incredibly well that first season, and they were always very generous towards me, and spent a lot of really fantastic social nights out with the guys, and just got to know them very, very well. And Shane was one of them, and Shane was always somebody who I've maintained a strong relationship, a strong friendship with over a long period of time, and someone who's I've always found to be an incredibly genuine person, someone who was always, he's one of those players, a wee bit like Corey as well, someone like he's, after a game, he still wanted to talk hockey. He absolutely loves the sport. And, you know, some players, as soon as the game's over, do not want to engage either hockey fans, or they don't want to engage any hockey chat. Shane and the likes of Corey and Killer. Killer was another one who would have loved to talk hockey all night. Shane was one of those people who would have come up to you in the bar as well and said, "How do you think tonight went? I thought we were poor. I thought we were great. What do you think of our power play? You know, our penalty kill sucked tonight. And, you know, blah, blah, blah. What do you think of this guy?" And he was someone who engaged you. And, you know, I got on very, very well with him. And I've always enjoyed sitting down with Shane over a beer and having a good chat about hockey. And, you know, he's a legend with Belfast. And, you know, I personally felt that he was very harshly treated during Ed Courtney's reign with the club. Shane was always someone who was a fantastic skater, came up with important goals. And as I think Paxton Schulte and Colin Ward actually said in an interview before his testimonial, Shane Johnson versus the Hull Stingrays, versus the Edinburgh Capitals, would have just had a good game, a consistent game. But Shane Johnson versus the Nottingham Panthers or the Sheffield Steelers or the London Knights, Shane Johnson would have come up with a game-winning goal. He would have come up with a fantastic pass to lead to a game-winning goal. He always stood up in the big games. And for me, that was always a sign, or it is always a sign, of a top player. That guy who can stand up when you really, really need him. And Shane Johnson was always that person for me. And, you know, that's the reason why his jersey is now hanging from the rafters.
Davy, Shane Johnson, one of the consistent performers of British hockey, be it with Belfast, be it with Slough, Sheffield, Cardiff. You know, he always put in a proper shift, as Coach said. He always sparkled in those big games, be it the playoff final, be it, you know, a game against Sheffield for the title, be it no matter what. Shane Johnson was always, and that, like I say, it's one of the reasons that his number does hang from the rafters in the Odyssey.
I hate to think of Shane Johnson, the Cardiff Devil, the Sheffield Steeler, yeah, the Slough Jet. You know, it kind of rankles with me that situation was allowed to happen over personalities more than hockey ability, because for me, Shane Johnson, easily the best pure sort of transition D-man we've ever had. You know, Shane Johnson could pick the puck up from behind his own net and bang, all of a sudden you're in the red zone at the other end of the ice, and Shane Johnson still got the puck on the stick. He went past opposition forwards time and time and time again, like they just weren't there. And as you've said, you know, if your playoff final all those years ago, for a D-man to come up with two goals they got to win the playoffs, and just his number is very, very well deserved to be hanging beside the other shirts in the other. I can't speak highly enough about Shane Johnson. I feel very sorry, as I've said already, that he didn't just have the Belfast Giants his whole career, and I feel very sorry for him the way the career ended with the injuries. You know, I'm sure Shane Johnson would have liked to have went out on his own terms. You know, I'm walking away here, guys, I'm walking away a winner. Now, he walked away a winner, and as much as, you know, walking away with a medal in his hand, but, you know, I'm sure that last playoff final he wanted to be on the ice and you know, making a big contribution. And it's sad that, you know, his career petered out the way it did, but, you know, he'll always be just a Belfast Giant to me. I don't like to think of his other teams.
Well, speaking of his other teams, I have to say one of my enduring memories was with another team for him, was the Slough Jets. I had the opportunity. I can't remember what game. There was definitely another game on at Ice Sheffield, be it Belfast against Manchester Phoenix when they were playing out of there, or be it just I was there to get drunk with Hitchie or something. I have no idea. But it was I definitely ended up watching I watched the Slough Jets play the Sheffield Scimitars as they were then. And Johnson was there, and he was far and away the best skater, the best puck handler on that ice. He was absolutely stunning for them. And it was during that time that he just did the whole Belfast saga with Courtney or whatever. And I remember having a chat, I think it was with Ian Holman, with regards to, you know, he shouldn't have been playing for that team. He shouldn't have been playing in that league. And he wasn't there for very long, and he was moved on, and he ended up joining the Cardiff Devils and the Sheffield Steelers, where he played for almost a season before coming back for Belfast. But Shane Johnson, for me, I say, one of the most consistent performers for the Belfast Giants. I think him and, like Todd Kelman, are two players who are sadly missed from the organisation on the ice. Will we get a player like that, those two again? I don't know. But, yeah, that was a great interview, Coach, and really appreciate it. And we look forward to the next one.
Paddy, just as you say there, you're talking about Todd Kelman, yeah, another fantastic, he's probably the best poke check, you know, I've ever seen. But just going back to Shane there, you know, one of the saddest things I think I've ever seen at the Odyssey was the night we raised the banner the season following Theo's championship winning season, we'll call it Theo's season if you like, and Shane Johnson returning with the Sheffield Steelers,
yeah, that's right.
Watch us raising a banner in our building, right. And for me, you know,
he should have been on the other blue line,
a guy that contributed as much as anyone that previous season, the us winning a championship, for him to have to stand there in a different jersey and watch his basically his teammates raise a banner, you know, that'll always stick with me. It's something that, you know, it was sad on that occasion rather than a happy occasion.
Definitely. Well, moving on, Davey, you've had a bit of an assessment on Twitter. We've been speaking for weeks about how, you know, we keep asking people, you know, for their talking points on Twitter, so we're going to finally get around to actually talking about what those people on Twitter want to talk about. So, what have we got?
Right, well, I'll fire off. There's a few questions from a few guys, and we can answer away at them here. First one from Kevin Bianco. He listens every week, so give him a follow, KevyB0712. He's asked, is there a podcast this week? And Kevin, yes, there is. The second one is from another avid listener, Big Carsey. Carson Aldo, is it true, since Coach has gone big time, he uses the stage door at the Odyssey?
Surely he wouldn't use any other door, would he?
I actually do.
Right, but on a couple of serious ones here, at Ryan C. MCB, did Convoy act the way he did to avoid Keith on Sunday night?
No. There's no way. Everybody knows that the situation between Convoy and Keith has to come to an end somehow. Unfortunately, it had to be Keith against Plumpton in this situation. I think Convoy is just that sort of player. There's no way he'd be avoiding Keith, Coach.
Couldn't agree more. It's just a flat no. You know, at the end of the day, if he doesn't want to fight, the guy doesn't have to fight.
Agreed.
Keith, the next night, he doesn't have to. He's not going to be forced to fight. And let's face it, if he ended up having to drop the gloves, if he didn't really deep down want to fight him, he could just turtle after throwing a couple of punches himself. And who knows, he might get lucky and drop Keith himself. But you know, he's a tough guy. You can see some fights of Convoy's. The guy can look after himself okay, but he's just playing so irrationally at present. You know, it's just, you know, in that interview I did with Brent Pope after the game on Sunday night, he kind of alluded to the fact, you know, oh, maybe it was, you know, the frustrations coming in because he's adjusting to a new league. I'm afraid I'm not buying that either from Poper, because, you know, everyone knows the rules of the game. You do not touch an official. You do not headbutt a fellow professional. You do not eye gouge or attempt to eye gouge a fellow professional. Those are lines that are crossed. And to me, Convoy's just kind of living a wee bit on the edge. And who knows? You know, maybe the guy has just a few personal issues going on in his own head. But I certainly don't think it's certainly anything to do with being afraid of Adam Keefe now.
Here's one now that it's around the Convoy incident that I don't know the answer to. It's from GCR, it's from at Bisto41. Is a suspended player allowed in the tunnel stroke bench area during a game? Anybody know the answer to that?
Well, Convoy was down the tunnel.
Yeah, that's where his question's coming from.
Yeah, a suspended player... No, a suspended player would definitely not be allowed in the bench. I was thinking back to Paul Cruz, been on the bench the night that Jason Clark... went absolutely nuts and started acting a hard man and jumping players and Barry Knight Carnight, and Cruz was there to say, I look forward to seeing you boys next time I'm dressed. But you know, it's a suspended player isn't allowed on the bench, but I don't know anything about down the tunnel area.
I think
that's one we'll look into. We'll maybe ask Glover for
a clarification. I can't think of any reason. I don't. But let's be fair. This is the elite league. Who's going to stop them?
Yeah, right. Moving on. We've only another couple of questions here. And two from same question, more or less, from two guys, Glenn Rochette and Mr. Nile CFC. Kevin Phillips, is he doing it for you? He makes them very nervous.
Coach?
Kevin Phillips, to me, I've been impressed with him and Davey Phillips. It certainly hasn't stood out to me, or Kevin Phillips's play certainly hasn't stood out to me as been negligible in any way, or I'm kind of thinking, oh, jeepers, something bad's going to happen here, or whatever. I have to say, he's not one of the players that has stood out to me as been fantastic in any way, but I didn't expect him to, because, you know, he's a kind of young, developing British defenceman, and I think that pairing with him and Davey has worked pretty well to date, and I have to say it's certainly not something that stood out to me.
I just have to echo what Coach has to say. I don't get to say it much, actually. I just have to echo what Coach has just said. When it comes to D-men, a lot of people say, you know, if you don't notice them on the ice, it means that they're not doing anything wrong. And I can't say that there's any reason why Kevin Phillips has made me nervous. As Coach has said, that partnership between Davey and Kevin, I think, is working pretty well. There's very few teams in this league that would turn a pairing like that down. You know, we've got four top import defensemen doing a job, and then we've got two British defensemen doing as good a job as any import, in my opinion, because Davey's getting involved physically more than I've ever seen him get involved physically before. He's really upped his game, and Kevin is just sweeping things up. I honestly don't see why he would make you nervous, because I think, as Coach has said, pretty much doing a job and nothing to write home about.
If I can throw my tuppence worth in, which isn't going to be very much because I'm going to echo what you said, you know, I think there's teams we'd kill.
You boys always agree with me. I love this.
No, I'm agreeing with Paddy. if you know, there's a lot of teams would kill to have the quality of top 4D men that we have. But then when you go, you know, scratch below the surface of our top four, we've got a D-man in Davey Phillips who's played AHL, ECHL in the last number of seasons, who's thickened up, you know, body-wise. He's a bigger body now. He's doing it physically. And Kevin Phillips, for me, plays a very, very simple game. He gets the puck to the halfway line and he dumps it in. He's composed on the puck. He makes few mistakes. I don't actually get the nervous feeling that other people are getting. You know, I think he plays a pretty good game.
Yeah.
Well, then we'll go on to pretty much our last question on Twitter, which comes from Stephen Thompson at BFG14. If you want to give him a follow. If you guys haven't recorded this week's show yet, do you fancy discussing Evan Chevrolet? Is he doing enough this season? I'm underwhelmed so far. But before you guys get a go,
you want your go on this? You've been
I
want
to have a go at this because something you probably thought a couple of years ago you'd never hear me say about Evan Chevrolet. I'm an Evan Chevrolet fan in as much as I think Evan Chevrolet has came back a different player to the Belfast Giants than what he left. And I like what he's bringing to the team. Evan Chevrolet is playing in every situation for us at the minute. He's playing on the power play, even strength, and he's absolutely outstanding on the penalty kill. He reminds me very much of Mark Dudium in his last season, the way he holds on to the puck, the way he hits people on the forecheck. He's playing an almost George Wada-esque game on the penalty kill. And, you know, for me, he's playing a more defensive style of hockey. Before the season had started, I'd said on the podcast, you know, I thought he would get 20-plus goals because I thought he was going to come back as the Evan Chevrolet that left, who would be a go-to goal-scoring guy because that's what he'd done his whole career. But just think Coach Yeady has him playing a slightly different style. His numbers aren't bad, don't get me wrong. You know, he's a bit more of a setup man than a goal scorer on that second line. But I think because of the work he's doing on the penalty kill, and you see our team at the weekend, we were shorthanded a lot. Mm-hmm. That guy played an immense amount of minutes at the weekend. And for me, Stephen, you know, my opinion, I am not underwhelmed by him one bit. I'm very pleased with his progress.
Yeah, I have to say, first of all, thanks to the tweet of Stephen. If you go to Stephen this week did an article for kingdomofthegiants.com regards to how he got his hockey addiction. It's a very good read if you go to the website. But on the question on Evan Chevrolet, I have to agree with you, Davey, because I think to the goal that Chris Higgins scored in the NIC. Now, it was all about Chris Higgins and his sick hands and, you know, basically putting Craig Kowalski on his backside. But if you looked at the weighted pass from Evan Chevrolet just before that, it was the pass from Evan Chevrolet that actually set on just right on the edge of the blue line that actually set Higgins free. It was perfectly weighted. And that's exactly what Evan Chevrolet's been doing all season long. He's been getting involved in that. Like you say, he's been strong on the forecheck. Him and if it's not Evan Chevrolet, it's Darryl Lloyd that have been pushing right up high on the forecheck in a Georgia Wada fashion. And yeah, it's a totally different game. Maybe it is. Maybe that's why people are thinking that they're underwhelmed by it. Maybe they were thinking that Evan Chevrolet was going to be that guy that scored that shot in the playoff, you know, that penalty shot in the playoff final. It's not. It's a different player. It's a better player, in my opinion. It's a guy who's become a bit more rounded. And yeah, that second line for me are performing really okay. They've had a quiet weekend, but they've been performing very, very well. And a major part of that is Evan Chevrolet.
Coach?
I agree with absolutely everything that the two of you have said. Chevrolet has been immense, and it was something that Murph actually picked up on. Chevrolet has been immense on the penalty kill, and his work rate has been absolutely phenomenal. And that's a characteristic, again, of this team. And this team have been pretty much together now for three seasons, and that's where credit has to go to the likes of Doug Christensen. But this team is characterised, in my opinion, by its work rate. None more so than, in my opinion, Dustin Whitecotton. But I can tell you, Evan Chevrolet is not far behind Dustin Whitecotton in terms of work rate. And the both of you are right. He's come back a far better, all-rounded type player. And his work rate that maybe would not have been there before. I can remember whenever we re-signed him this season, saying a lot of, I think it was Paul Wheeler in Coventry, saying, you know, he's a lazy player, he didn't put the effort in for us. You would never, if you as a Belfast Giants fan think along those lines, just spend 60 minutes watching Evan Chevrolet whenever he's on the ice, because he's one of the hardest working players on our team, and he will, and he has done, come up with
goals and important goals, and he will continue to come up with important goals, but he's more than just a goal scorer for this team. He's a pivotal player on our team.
Well, thanks to everybody for those Twitter questions.
That me finish then, is it?
I think that's your bit, Myth. Thank you very much for everybody that sent in those Twitter questions. So you can send them more at AVFTB. What I also will mention is we've been talking a lot about the interviews pre and post game and everything that the coach has been doing at the rink and anything we can get in the away rink. And that's on our SoundCloud account. That's soundcloud.com/AVFTB. Quick scout about the league. I'll not get you guys too involved in this because I'm sure you are ready to talk about the games coming up. But the around the league, a few bits and pieces happening. A 12-skater Brayhead defeated the Sheffield Steelers, which was a bit of a shock. Coventry have been dumped out of the Challenge Cup, having been beaten by Hull. Craig Kowalski is on paternity leave. The club announced that his baby was born at 3:33 a.m. Come on. And his number's 33. I think it's a little bit of PR just to try to make it sound nice. But he's been replaced by Neil Conway, who's an import. There's been a few departures. Ericsson's left Coventry. Messias, I mentioned earlier, has departed from Brayhead. Nick Anderson's departed from Nottingham. And the main arrivals have all been in Nottinghamshire, in Lower Parliament Street, with Conway, Jensen, who scored a debut goal on Friday, and Michaela, who's arriving for Nottingham on the blue line. Quick note, gentlemen, the Nottingham Panthers spending big.
They aren't half, and I think the strong intimation from, you know, if you listen to a lot of the Nottingham fans, you listen to some of the Corey Nielsen interviews and what have you, I think and Jono, I listened to the Cats Whiskers last night, and the strong intimation is that it's just not clicking at the minute for the Nottingham Panthers. And I think, to be brutally honest with you, they were so spoiled last year with that team that they had. That was, in my opinion, the best team in the Elite League history. When you had guys like Gaelic Payne, Jason Beckett, Werner, albeit he's out injured again this season, but Werner, you know, Jordan Fox, who to me, I would have Jordan Fox on my team any day of the week, Bruce Graham, David Ling, these guys have all, bar Werner, had to be replaced, and they were all like MVP type players, and things just don't seem to be as sexy to watch. To quote Corey Nielsen, you know, it doesn't seem to be producing this team the sexy Nielsen hockey that maybe the Nottingham fans were used to last year. And
they're getting the wins, though.
Absolutely, and that's what I was literally just about to say. Nottingham fans can't be too disillusioned because they're still picking up points. Yeah. So they are, but it just might not be in the fashion that Corey Nielsen and maybe the Nottingham Panthers fans have become accustomed to.
Davey, David Ling was just mentioned there, and winding up, might not be lighting the lamp in the Elite League. He's certainly lighting the lamp in Newfoundland, unlike, unfortunately, our very own Gander Flyers.
Yeah, you know, Ling, 6 points in 2 games at the weekend there for the East Link CB Stars, you know, but then the Flyers went, they're 0-2 after their 2 games, but home openers this weekend, there's another 2 to follow at Gander Flyers, you know. We'll get Paddy to tweet up later on. The Flyers also do a YouTube cast, but like the Cats Whiskers, with you know, a bit of a production, and you can follow their goalie as well at Patrick O'Brien 29. Hopefully, Paddy O'Brien, good Northern Irish roots in him. You know, hopefully he gets a bit of a better game on them. But you know, that NL SHL has a few good players in it. You know, David Ling, as you've said. Pete Campbell used to play for the Giants. It's produced a vast number of players that have gone on the NHL. So we'll just keep up to date with them over the season. Hopefully the Flyers can pick up a win this weekend.
# Ulster Flyers. All right, guys. Let's quickly, we've been rattling on here. Let's quickly move on to this weekend. The Giants start on what is a pretty long road trip. We're not back in the Odyssey Arena for another month. And we start in Hull at the most versatile arena. On Saturday night, Hull still an import down after the incident with Derek Campbell going bonkers, but they're only missing an import for 15 games as the Elite League have decided. It's always a really gritty game in Hull, but these cross conference games are very important.
They're crucial now, especially as we have played so many conference games and we've put the points in the bag, and this is where you can't now take your foot off the gas and start dropping points, because the cross-conference points come the end of the season are going to be the crucial ones. Interesting just on the Campbell import situation there, where Campbell's picked up a 47 game, what I think it was something like 47 games, wasn't it? Mm-hmm, 40, but yeah. Only 15 of them are levied against
Hull.
15 are levied against Hull. Yeah. And interesting how they've worked that out, because, you know, for me, if I was Paul Ragan or Brent Pope, I would be going to the Elite League and saying, Hull only had to pay a percentage of their games in import down. We have Convoy out for 11 games. How many games are we to play in import down? You know, not that they probably are in a position to bring in a spare import, but, you know, it's just if you're... It throws up the whole question of, you know, if you're banned, should you have to play an import short? But then that's, you know, those that have and those that have not then get a bigger advantage again. But, you know, back on point, it's going to be a difficult game at the weekend, but I think we should still have a little too much in the toolbox just for Hull.
Omar Pasha on the D playing really well, Guillaume Doucette, and of course Jeremy Tendler is an absolute goal machine for them, coach.
He's got to be watched big time, no question about that. But I'm with Davey. We should have way too much firepower for the Hull Stingrays. It's a place that we have done incredibly well in over the last lot of years. I think it's important. I noticed, was it Davey Phillips saying today on camera, you know, you got to just focus on the next 60 minutes. And that happens to be against the Hull Stingrays. You cannot be thinking, going to rest bodies in preparation for Sheffield tomorrow. You know, the guys are in the Yorkshire area. They're going to play Hull on Saturday. They'll finish that. They'll drive to their hotel, Sheffield, get a good night's kip and all the rest. Just play a hard 60 minutes on Saturday night and you'll be ready for Sunday night. That natural adrenaline will come for the massive game against Sheffield, but you've got to still put in a proper shift, and as Adam Keefe would say, put on the working boots for going into the likes of Hull.
You know, Paddy, sorry to jump in there. Talking about Jeremy Tender, this guy for season point... I don't subscribe to that. He should go to a bigger club, perceived bigger club. But, you know, Tendler already this season, 17 games, 16 goals, 29 points, you know.
Machine.
But it's a special teams. You know, 5 power play goals, 3 shorthanded goals. You know, this guy is good for a goal every time he steps on the ice. And as coach said, him, Guillaume Doucette, has been outstanding as well. 27 points through 17 games. Matthew Davis, 24 points through 17. You know, they have got a top line there of Davis, Doucette and Tendler that are just on fire at the minute. And they are the line that we need. Robbie Sandrock, Jeff Mason, Elfring, Brookwell and the Phillips brothers to be all over every time they're on the ice.
That game at Hull, they have a great webcast. Now, I don't think they have a colour commentator. Maybe coach can fly over and provide his expertise. But there is, if you go to the hullstingrays.co.uk for their live coverage on Saturday night. And then, as you say, coach, they move down to Sheffield on Sunday. Doug Christensen, unfortunately, lost his father a couple of weeks ago. He's been away for a while. In that time, they've lost a 5 to Coventry and a 12-skater Brayhead. But Belfast lost in a very tight game only a couple of weeks ago. Doug will be back for this weekend and back for the game. It's good to have him back in the league. Davey, I think this could also be quite a tight game.
There'll certainly be a different prospect with Doug on the bench than Furby. You know, it's one of those things, and you can sort of go back to the Cardiff thing. Whenever Brent Pope goes off to the Olympics, I can't remember the guy's name, really bad on me, but they've brought him in to run the bench, and he was the Cardiff Devils
junior N1.
What is it?
Is it the NIHL setup?
Yeah, the NIHL guy. So, you know, very, very little experience at this level. Mark Lefebvre, although he has experience on the ice at this level, doesn't have the experience coaching at this level. And there's, you know, points make prizes. He hasn't picked up any points while Doug's been away. I think there'll be a different prospect this week if Doug's had a week of coaching and training with him. It's never easy to go into the tin hut there and get a result. But, you know, I'm confident that, you know, if we can get off on this road swing, 3 points over this weekend would not be a disaster by any means.
Furby certainly has the coach's pose, though. He loves to put his foot up on the boards and the elbow on the knee and, you know, just have a look out. So he may not have the expertise in the sea, but he certainly has the pose. Coach, there doesn't seem to be... They haven't been able to settle. That Sheffield, we spoke to Doug Christensen. He says, you know, it seems to be year on year for the experience he has, that they have injuries earlier on. Of course, they lost... They lost Maxime Lacroix. Danny Myers is just coming back from injury. They're chopping and changing. Maybe if these lines settle down, Sheffield will be able to get back into their groove. But at the minute, it's very difficult for them.
it's a very strange setup. There's no question about that, because Doug Christensen is someone who, you know, we have said has basically got better season on season in terms of his recruiting and how he goes about it and what type of player he brings in. And, you know, I listened to it was actually a fantastic interview with the Sheffield goalie today, Doyle, on Radio Sheffield, I think it was. And he said in all his professional career, he's never played in a tighter dressing room. So Doug has obviously recruited well in terms of the personalities that he's brought in. And that doesn't surprise me after what we've seen in Belfast over the last few years. But it's a very strange setup that the players have got obvious qualities. You look at their roster, like it's an AHL type roster in terms of, you know, the experience that they've got there. A lot of those guys have played at the top end of the game and they just don't seem to be clicking, and it seems to be so inconsistent. And that's something that Doug will be tearing his hair out about, because he is always about consistency, and that was something that he instilled into our club. And Sheffield are just really struggling at the present to kind of knit together three or four games. They're going maybe two games and then losing two and then winning one, losing one, and it's just highly inconsistent. And as a Belfast Giants fan, I'm absolutely delighted to see it, but I find it very, very strange.
Well, that game on Sunday night, there's no webcast in Sheffield, but there will be coverage from the @AVFTB Twitter account, because I'm going to be making my way down to that myself. Gentlemen, a long show, but plenty to talk about. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers, Patrick.
Bye-bye, Nip.
And that's the lot. Yep, it's almost a month before the Giants are back at the Odyssey Arena. So if you want to keep up to date with all the action with regards to games and where the Giants are playing, keep your eye on kingdomofthegiants.com, and we'll keep you up to date as to where the information will come to from, be it streams, be it Twitter, be it whatever. You'll find all the information on that at kingdomofthegiants.com. With regards to this weekend, of course, you've got the game in Hull. There'll be a stream. If you go to the Hull Stingrays website, there'll be a live stream of that. And with regards to the game on Sunday against the Sheffield Steelers, we'll have live Twitter updates at AVFTB. For that, of course, you want to drop us an email, podcast@kingdomofthegiants.com. And the website, as you know, is www.kingdomofthegiants.com/podcast. And wherever you are this weekend, we hope you enjoy your hockey. And we'll catch you here next time on A View from the Bridge.